Welcome to the 304th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are reviewing Patrick's weekend predictions, a look back at the last week in college basketball action, and our weekly look at the NBA. So let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our social media at 4th and 24, being those social media handles. We'll start in college basketball, where Patrick went 1-3 with his weekend predictions. On the flip side, in the NBA, Patrick went 3-1 with his weekend predictions, so we all can do the math. That brings him to a 4-4 record with last weekend's predictions, and that moves his overall record to 1,292-810, 61.5% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, I thought obviously that my college basketball predictions could have been a little bit better, but you know what? Starting there, I went 1-3, but two of them were overtime games, and both of them I got wrong, which is just, you know, that's just kind of unfortunate. Can't really do much about that. Literally a point away from 3-1 in those predictions, or 2 points away total, but 1 point away in each game from being 3-1. So I don't really, that one doesn't really, but that doesn't bother me that much. But I picked I picked Marquette to beat St. John's. Number six, St. John's beat number 20 Marquette 86-84 in overtime on the road. St. John's picking up yet another win. It was really one of their first signature wins. They only have four quad one wins this entire season, which is the reason why, despite their great record and great ranking in the AP poll, which has nothing to do with the tournament selection committee, they aren't that high up on the seed list because, well, they just have a bunch of wins. They don't really have quality wins. Like I said, just four on the year and then four losses in quad one. So yes, their losses are all good, are all good losses, but don't have many good wins to back it up. Marquette, though, at the end of that game, Chase Ross got the ball poked out of his hands in overtime. He didn't see Kadari Richmond behind him. He was looking up court. There was 3 seconds left, so only time to maybe chuck a down court pass and hope that someone could get a half court heave off or a three without their feet set, something like that. And didn't see Richmond. Richmond poked it. Someone passed it to Zubi Ejiofor, who floated it up with like a half a second left and it went in. And that was the game winning shot for St. John's, which is just, I mean, it was a crazy ending to a crazy game. And it was an amazing game all throughout. Really, really entertaining. Probably the best Marquette's played in weeks. But they still won 0-2 this week. And I'll talk about that later. Then you have number seven, Alabama, who beat number one, Auburn, 93-91 in overtime. Same story there. Mark Sears with the game winning floater. So both teams, game-winning floaters by their best players, arguably. You could actually make arguments for both teams that there might be better players. Maybe not as much Alabama, but definitely St. John's with RJ Lewis. Alabama wins that game. Again, I talked about Auburn maybe not, or I talked to you, I guess, not on the podcast about Auburn, maybe not having as much motivation as they normally do because they already wrapped up the SEC title. And, you know, they even showed Bruce Pearl's fiery pregame speech on ESPN, and he said, let's go out there and win a title. And I thought to myself, you already won the title, so what are you going out there to win? But you know what, it's hard, it can be hard to motivate a team when all they have left is just rivalry bragging rights. However, that was not the case for number eight Michigan State, who beat number 17 Michigan 79-62. Michigan State just matches up perfectly with Michigan. Michigan turns the ball over a ton. Michigan State makes teams turn the ball over a ton. They don't even have to do anything special on defense, though, to make Michigan do that. They'll just do that on their own. And Michigan State escaped with that victory pretty easily because of that one. Then you have number 19, Kentucky, who beat number 15, Missouri, 91-83 on the road. A big win for Kentucky without Jackson Robinson. As long as they get maybe like a win in the SEC tournament, I think the committee is just going to evaluate their resume as if there were no injuries restricting them the whole time, because Jackson Robinson is out for the season. But it was going to be a big deal if he went out for the season and they went, you know, had a bad record in their last five games, but they've actually played marginally better potentially in those five games or so without him recently. So I think the committee can't take away what they did earlier in the year and say, well, that was when they were at full strength, when they are not at full strength still, but they're still playing at the same level, which is a big win for them. But yeah, I got the two overtime games wrong, and then I got that road win wrong. Then in the NBA, 3-1, like you said, very good. The Grizzlies beat the Mavericks 122 to 111. Obviously, the Mavericks very injured. Speaking of injuries, the Clippers beat the Knicks 105 to 95. I predicted this game before I knew Jalen Brunson was injured. And of course, the result happened after Jalen Brunson was injured. So just unfortunate there for me. But yeah, that was the one game I got wrong this week. But then the Celtics beat the Lakers 111-101. Speaking of injuries, LeBron injured his groin in this game, out for 1 to 2 weeks, I believe, is the report currently out there. And then the Warriors beat the Pistons 115 to 110. Yes, the Warriors and Pistons are a predictable matchup now because those two teams are actually having really great seasons, unlike the Pistons' preseason expectations and the Warriors' midseason shift in expectations.
All right. Well, Patrick's predictions for next weekend will be posted on our social media on Thursday. We now move to basketball action, starting with the most significant college basketball action from last week.
Starting with the game that I talked about earlier, or hinted at earlier, number one, Auburn lost to number 22, Texas A&M, 83-72. Big win for the Aggies. They needed that to just get their resume back on board after a bunch of losses in a row. Then you have number 23, BYU, who beat number 10, Iowa State, 88-85 in double overtime. This was a road game, too. So BYU getting a really, really, really good win. Arguably the second, it's either the second or the third hardest win to get in the Big 12. Obviously, Houston on the road, Texas Tech on the road are, you know, the debatable ones. Houston definitely is the hardest win to get because, well, they only lost once. But yeah, it's between Iowa State and Texas Tech on the road for that second hardest or third hardest win to get in the Big 12. And they got that one. So good for BYU. Then you have number 18, Purdue. They beat Rutgers 100-71. Purdue, they needed a feel-good win. I mean, they kind of, like Texas A&M, had lost a few games in a row, and they were desperately needing just anything to get them back in the win column. And they got that in this game against Rutgers. However, you know, not exactly a signature win or anything like that, but, you know, 30-point win against a team with a lot of talent. Rutgers did lead this game by 12 with 10 minutes left in the first half. So there was a chance that Purdue was on upset alert for a little bit, but then they kind of turned it on later in the game. They figured it out. Then you have number 24, Arizona. They beat Arizona State 113-100. High scoring game. I don't know how Arizona gave up 100 to a team that was only playing six guys because of injuries. But they did, or I guess seven guys, and then eight if you include Adam Miller's 1 minute or 0 minutes actually played until he got injured. So I don't know how that game, I don't even know how they gave up 100 points to that team. But, you know, Arizona, they escape with the win. Not liking how they play recently. I think you could probably tell based on how I was talking about that win. But, you know, a win's a win. Later in the week, we'll talk about why not so satisfied with how they're playing. Then you have Texas, who's in the first four out. They beat number 25 Mississippi State 87-82 in overtime on the road. They needed this win. The Longhorns desperately, desperately, desperately needed to go 2-0 this week to get back into the field. If they went 1-1, which we'll talk about later, if they did or if they didn't, but if they went 1-1, they'd be reliant on SEC tournament run, getting a few wins there, hoping that there aren't more bid stealers, all of that stuff. And unfortunately, yeah, foreshadowing a little bit, they did not do that. Or they did not go 2-0. But Georgia beat South Carolina 73-64 on the road. Worth mentioning because Georgia has had a just ridiculous end to the season. They just keep winning games. Just when everybody started to take them out of their bracket, I mean, they had been in but kind of creeping down the bubble for most of the season. And then just when everybody came to the consensus that, okay, you know, they've lost enough in a row, they're sitting here at 4-10 in SEC play, maybe, you know, maybe it's time. They might not have what it takes to be a tournament team, but just when you think they're out, they go and beat Florida at Texas, at South Carolina, and then got one more win that I'll talk about later to end the season four in a row, with four wins in a row, and 8-10 in conference, which, considering their only non-conference loss was to Marquette, and they beat St. John's also in the non-con, it's a pretty good resume there that they have. Now they are completely off the bubble, in my opinion. Although, you know, they lose on the first round of the SEC tournament to Oklahoma, then, I mean, they're not going to miss the tournament, but they'd still be back on the bubble. And, you know, maybe with some bid thieves, they'd have a little bit of a sweaty Selection Sunday. But if you want to talk about sweaty Selection Sundays, North Carolina is the first team out still. They beat Virginia Tech 91 to 59. Good to get that win by margin and not just, you know, by 10 or 12. They kind of needed that. West Virginia, who's in my last four byes, beat Utah 71 to 69. They should be in it because they have a lot of good wins. They just don't have the metrics of a team that should be safe. They're kind of in the 40s or high 30s and everything, which would indicate one of the last few bids into the tournament. Also have some injuries too, with Tucker DeVries being out for the season, that, you know, they picked up some of those wins when he was still healthy. So there's that to evaluate as well when you look at that team. Then you have Oregon, who beat Indiana, who's in the last four in 73 to 64. This is the last time I'm mentioning an Oregon game, so I do have to say, people forgot how good Oregon was to start the season. Myself included. No, not myself included. I knew they were good to start the season. It's just they've had an interesting road since then. I mean, this team started out the season 9-0, including one conference win at USC. That also included a win at Oregon State, who's a solid team, against Troy, who's an auto bid, and I'll get to that later, against Texas A&M, San Diego State, and Alabama on neutral courts, who are all tournament teams. And mind you, Alabama probably the final or the best two seed, maybe a one seed depending on what they do, and then A&M a three or a four seed. You know, they lost to UCLA. That's not that big of a deal. And they lost to Illinois, and it wasn't that big of a deal. And then, you know, they rattled off three straight wins. They beat Ohio State, they beat Penn State, they beat Maryland, who, by the way, Maryland tournament team, Ohio State maybe tournament team. And then all of a sudden, everything just fell off the rails. Oregon lost to Purdue at home. They barely beat Washington, and then they lost six games in a row. And everybody was just wondering what happened to the Ducks. Like, where was the team that started 9-0? And was up to the top 10 in the AP poll and just has all of these ridiculous wins. And they still had a bunch of quad one wins from winning at Ohio State against Maryland, those three on the neutral court. They had all of those wins. And then all of a sudden, at the end of the season, after falling to 5-8 in the Big Ten, Oregon has won seven straight games. So people should watch out for this team because, I mean, it feels like they're one of those teams that inevitably plays really well in the conference tournament, and then everybody picks them to go far, and they lose in the first round, and they kind of just revert back to that the six game losing streak type team. I have no idea what to do with them, but I would like to say this team is really, really hot to end the season. And the one difference is they're not just like a team that, you know, got hot in March, Matt, that got hot end of February into March and had nothing going in the non-conference. We know that they had stuff going in the non-conference with those wins over A&M, over Alabama, over San Diego State. They clearly have the level to do that on a neutral court and do it multiple times in a week, which those games were 3 days in a row. So they have that level if they want it. And if they can get to it, they can be really dangerous. But, you know, they're a really hard team to evaluate as a not as a bracketologist, as someone just picking who will actually advance far in the NCAA tournament, just because they've been so up and down this season. But then you have Ohio State in the last four in. They beat Nebraska 116 to 114 in double overtime. Just a crazy, crazy, crazy game between two bubble teams. Nebraska at the time was realistically in the picture, and that was a road game. So that could have given them a quad 1A victory that could have boosted their resume a ton. Instead, Nebraska lost their fourth game in a row. They would eventually lose their fifth game in a row to end the season. And that team didn't even make the Big Ten tournament, despite being in the NCAA tournament projected field for most of the season. Then you have Arkansas, I said, or actually not the game I mentioned earlier. There's Georgia and Vanderbilt, but I'll get to that later. Arkansas in the last four byes beat Vanderbilt in the last four byes, 90 to 77. Important victory for the Razorbacks to improve their seeding. Number 13, Maryland beat number 17, Michigan on the road, 71 to 65. Michigan has been trending down for a while. If you go back to the middle of February on Bart Torvik, which you can do, and you can sort by dates from whatever date you want to until whatever date you want to. Michigan has been hovering around 90th or 100th in efficiency matrix or in efficiency metrics, excuse me, since mid-February, which that is not what you want from a team that's in the top 25 or even in the tournament. I mean, that would indicate that they're worse than the entire tournament field, plus a few NIT teams and all the auto bids. So Michigan definitely has not been playing very well recently, but they still obviously have the talent to pick it back up. We'll just see if they actually do that or not. Then you have Ole Miss, who beat number four Tennessee 78-76. They got one of the four big wins in the SEC that you can get to move your resume up a little bit, or move just everything up a little bit in terms of metrics, which in turn would result in your resume improving. It's a big win for them. And then number five Florida beat number seven Alabama 99-94 on the road. So Florida has kind of been that team at the end of the season that out of that bunch in the SEC that's kind of behind Auburn, Florida has been the team that looks the most capable of getting on to that level. They're the ones who ended second in the SEC. They won at Alabama and at Auburn over the course of this season. Yes, they lost to Georgia, but if you look past that Georgia loss, they were 18-3, 5-3 in conference play, and they ended the season 14-4. So they won 9 of their last 10, only losing to Georgia, who they had already beaten by 30 at home earlier in the season. And if you want to go back even farther than that, they only lost before that to Tennessee, who they had also already beaten by 30 at home. So they beat A&M in that span. They beat Mississippi State and Auburn on the road. They beat Vanderbilt. They beat Oklahoma. They won at Alabama. So look, this is a juggernaut of a team. People talk about Alabama in the SEC because that they were the preseason number two or number one. I think they were number two behind Kansas. But they talk about that, and then they talk about Auburn because rightfully so, they've been dominant all season. Florida won at Auburn. Florida won at Alabama. Watch out for this team in March. Big, big win for them. Then you have Oklahoma, and they're probably going to be rewarded with a one seed for those wins, I should mention. Then you have Oklahoma, who is the last bye for me currently. Very, 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 very much on the bubble. Beat number 15, Missouri, 96-84. Good double-digit win in a quad one game. A very, very solid win for the Sooners. Then UConn beat number 20, Marquette, 72-66. Mentioned this earlier in predictions, how I thought Marquette played at least decent twice, but also lost twice. This was the first game of those two. Then you have Xavier, who's in my last four in, who beat Butler, the second to last team in, actually, who beat Butler 91-78. They just need to keep winning, probably get one or two in the Big East tournament. They probably need to beat one of the big four, of Marquette, St. John's, and UConn. I mean, really, it's just actually a big three kind of. Oh yeah, and Creighton, I guess you could kind of throw in there with UConn, but it's really a big two and then a two after that. But yeah, just get one of those wins. It's a quad one win, and that'll kind of solve a lot of Xavier's problems because their biggest problem right now is that while they have three wins against the at-large field or two or three, depending on who you have in, they only have one quad one win. So that would solve that problem if they could get one of those and then just not suffer a bad loss in that tournament. Then you have number eight, Michigan State, who beat Iowa 91-84. This was a semi-close game for a little bit, and then Michigan State went on like a 31-2 run or something like that. This game also clinched the outright Big Ten title for Michigan State, so important in that aspect. Illinois beat number 18, Purdue 88-80. The Illini are back in the AP poll now that they're back and healthy. They've rattled off a 20-point win at Michigan. They've beaten Purdue, obviously, this week. Just a lot of wins coming in for Illinois at the right time. They're kind of clicking. Still a young team and still a very, 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 very inexperienced team, including just playing with each other. So it's kind of hard to say what they're going to do in March. But I have to say, if you're asking me personally, I would probably lean towards they're not going to do a whole lot because, Illinois as a reputation doesn't do very well in March Madness, period. And also they're a really, really young team. And I think that, they've shown that they're in sync recently, but is that going to sustain through multiple weekends of the NCAA tournament? I don't know. They probably are still maybe a second weekend team, depending on their bracket, but yeah, it's hard to say without seeing who exactly they're going to play. And they've also had better teams than this that have not gone that far. So who's to say at this point in the season? Then you have number 16, Memphis, who beat South Florida 84 to 68. Solid win by Memphis, who keeps getting passed up on the seed list just because they can't claim any good wins in their conference. They just kind of have to keep winning and winning by a lot. Then you have Dayton, who's in my next four out, that beat VCU 79 to 76 on the road. VCU still, I believe, claimed the one seed. If not, they shared the A-10 title. But they needed that win to cement their at-large case. I think if they had beaten Dayton, I don't really think it matters when they lost in the A-10 tournament. I think they would have been in. Now I'm not so sure they're a lock. I mean, if they win a few games, they're going to be fine. And they lose to one of those teams that's high quad two or maybe low quad one, I guess they are going to be fine, but I just don't know. You know, their resume is a little bit shaky now. And then also, if they lose in their conference tournament, that means there's a bid thief by whoever does win that conference tournament, et cetera, et cetera. But meanwhile, for Dayton, they have now built a solid enough end of the season resume to kind of wash away the middle of the season for them. They had a strong non-conference, so it's possible that they could get an at-large bid without winning that conference as well. It would probably take them losing to VCU, and it would have to be in the semifinals or the final. Not quite sure actually how that bracket looks like. I don't have it in front of me or anything, but they could easily still get in if they lose in the semis or the finals to VCU, but they can't lose to anyone else really in that conference. They can't really afford to lose earlier. And frankly, they might need the win over VCU to really propel their resume a little bit more. But speaking of battles that are important for the bubble, Colorado State, who's in my first four out now, beat Boise State, who's in my first four out and has been for the last week, 83 to 73. That was on the road, a big win by Colorado State. Had Boise State won that game, I don't think they would have necessarily jumped in the field, but they would have been very, very close to it, probably the first team out. And then with Colorado State winning, that brought them from next four out, maybe just only in considered territory, all the way to the first four out with a big, big quad one road win. Talked about Alabama beating Auburn in predictions. Then you have number two, Duke, who beat North Carolina 82 to 69 as we're into Saturday action now. North Carolina couldn't take advantage from RJ Davis having like 20 points with only a few minutes into the second half and Cooper Flagg having three fouls in the first half. Couldn't take advantage of it at all. Duke just ran away with this one at the end. North Carolina still somewhere on the bubble in the first four out somewhere. Then you have number three, Houston, who beat Baylor 65 to 61 to cap off a 19-1 Big 12 season. So for everybody who said that Houston wasn't going to dominate when they shifted up conferences, what if I told you they have the exact same conference record that everybody kept ripping them for in the American? And by the way, Memphis was the only team that could beat them in the American. Texas Tech has beaten Houston this year, but that game took double overtime. And Houston also beat them later in the year. So say what you want, but this team, they just don't lose. I mean, it does not matter what conference they're in. It does not matter who they're playing. They don't lose, period. That's the story on this team. Then you have number four, Tennessee, who beat South Carolina 75 to 65. Number five, Florida, beat Ole Miss 90 to 71. Big blowout there for the Gators. Like I said, closing out the season strong. St. John's beat Marquette. Talked about that in predictions. Really baffling loss. Penn State beat number 12 Wisconsin 86 to 75. Penn State didn't even qualify for the Big Ten tournament. They were last in the conference heading into the week, or I guess maybe tied for last with Washington. And yeah, they pull out this win, which not even a rivalry game, and it was on the road. So I really don't know how Wisconsin lost this one. I'm going to be totally honest. I saw that they were up by seven sometime in the first half, and I just said, okay, I'm not even going to turn that game on. Way too many games on a Saturday for me to even think about looking at that. But then number 19, Kentucky beat number 15, Missouri, talked about it in predictions. Kansas beat number 24, Arizona, 83 to 76. Talked about Arizona not playing good defense against Arizona State. Well, it came back to bite them against Kansas. Kansas has not been playing well recently. Fog Allen has been a place where instead of, one team eking out a win this year, multiple teams have gone in there and gotten victories. Texas Tech, West Virginia, Houston. So, this is not like normally when you lose to Kansas at Fog, it's kind of a okay, whatever. Doesn't move you at all kind of a thing. Arizona losing this game is actually somewhat surprising. They should, I know they were underdogs in this game, probably would beat Kansas on a neutral court, but this is a game they should not be losing considering how poorly Kansas has been playing for the last week or two, or well, really month or two. Then you have Arkansas in my last four byes. They beat number 25 Mississippi State 93-92. Arkansas has stacked up good wins at the end of the year. Like I said, they beat Vanderbilt. And then they got this one. And that's really going to take them off the bubble. They also beat Texas a few weeks ago. So that's going to take them off the bubble. Definitely helps a lot. Then you have Georgia, who's in my last, or sorry, Georgia, who's now off the bubble, who beat Vanderbilt, who is in my last four byes after this result. 79-68 again, Georgia stacking up the good wins. This was their fourth win in a row to end the season. In the Big Ten, you have an all-important bubble battle. Indiana in my last four and beat Ohio State, who's also still in my last four and the very last team in the bracket, 66-60. Very, very important win for Indiana. Even though they're still in my last four in, I think they're pretty secure in terms of being in the tournament. They have good resume metrics, which are the metrics that matter the most for getting into the tournament. Their predictive metrics are just a little bit lacking behind, which are lagging or lagging behind or lacking, whichever term you prefer, which means that in terms of seeding, they're kind of hampered a little bit, but they are still a tournament team. And I think even if they lost in their first matchup in the Big Ten tournament, which is against Oregon, they'd still be fine. But if they are to win, if they win that game against Oregon, they're going to be a lock. Can't give them a lock status right now at all. But I still think they're going to end up on the right side of the bubble. They hit that 10-10 mark in Big Ten play. The only problem is just no real impressive non-conference wins. That's kind of their issue. But then you have Florida State. They beat SMU, who is in my next four out still somehow, 76-69. SMU has no real shot at the tournament, though. I can't lie. It would require a crazy, crazy run at the ACC tournament. And there also just aren't that many good wins to pick up along the way. So I don't even think it would matter. They probably need to win the ACC tournament to get in the NCAA tournament. But then you have Xavier. They beat Providence 76-68. Talked about what they need to do already. West Virginia, who's in my last four byes, beat UCF 72-65. Not quite a lock, but pretty close to it. As close as you can get to one, just because they have a lot of wins, don't have a lot of bad losses. It's just the injury issues that kind of make me a little bit worried. Just what happens? Does the committee say we have to evaluate this team only on what they did without Tucker DeVries? How much are they going to value what they did when he was still playing? Because they did a lot of work on that resume when he was still there. But at the same time, they won at Kansas without him. So they've proven that they can win big games without him. So yeah, I think they're still going to be fine. I just can't say they're a lock either, kind of in that Indiana territory, but a little bit higher up there. Then you have number 8 Michigan State, who beat number 17 Michigan. Talked about that already. And the rest of these games are conference tournament games. But a lot of these are auto bids, or all of them except one are auto bids. So SIU Edwardsville beats Southeast Missouri State 69-48. That is SIUE's first tournament appearance ever. The OVC is awful this year. This is probably one of the worst conferences out there. But you know what? They're going dancing. Will they play Auburn in the first round? Maybe. But you know what? At least they got there. There are 300 teams that can't say they got there. So they should be happy that they are there. Then you have High Point, who beat Winthrop 81-69 to win the Big South auto bid. They are not going to be a first round exit like SIUE will be. This team could win a game. They could win two games. I mean, I don't think people understand the magnitude of this. This team, first of all, rumors out there that they throw out some kind of crazy NIL deals for how weak of a program this has been historically. This is literally their first or second tournament appearance all time. But 26th in offensive rating on KenPom. That's adjusted for opponents. So that's not raw points per 100 possessions. That is opponent adjusted. That puts them ahead of teams like, I mean, I did this exercise a few days ago. They're right behind Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, four spots behind Tennessee, and they're right ahead of Ole Miss, Michigan State, Iowa State, and Louisville. So this is a strong team on offense. The only issue is they are a outside of the top 200 in defense. So they have really big issues guarding the ball, but they can score with anybody. And they went on a 24-2 run in this game to actually get in the lead and eventually win the game. So like this team, that was in the semifinals. And then they just beat Winthrop pretty comfortably. This team can score, though, is the point. And they can score enough that, you know, they might put up one of those weird March Madness games where, you know, they might go like 50% from three and shoot like 16 of 32 as a team from 3-point land. And they might just run into a team that literally cannot match that offensive production in the first round. It's very, very possible that one of the four seeds they might play, or even a five seed, I don't know if they're going to get a 12 or 13, kind of depends on other conference tournaments, but they're somewhere in that range. This is a good team, though. They are capable of pulling off a win, despite how bad their defense is. They just need another team to go slightly cold and their offense can take over. Then you have Lipscomb, who beat North Alabama 76-65. Not quite as electric of a team in terms of the difference between their offensive and defensive efficiency, but they're about in the same range for metrics and for seeding. That High Point is, they're probably a 13 seed, much more likely to be a 13 than a 12, but still technically have a chance at a 12 depending on who wins other conference tournaments again. But they get the ace on auto bid. Drake beats Bradley 63-48 to claim the MVC auto bid, and then you don't have to worry about a bid stealer there because Drake definitely had an at-large case with only three losses all season long. But Drake, great season. They beat Vanderbilt. They beat Kansas State earlier in the season. Vanderbilt on a neutral court, Kansas State on the road. They have some impressive wins. Like I said, those two games included, they only lost three times, all three in conference. So pretty good resume, pretty good season for Drake. First season with their new head coach, they brought him from Northwest Missouri State, where he had won four D2 national titles. And his play and the MVC player of the year, actually kind of interesting note, wasn't even on the first team all conference last year in D2. But he was the player of the year in the MVC this year. So just lets you know those D2 players, some of them and some of those teams are way more talented than anybody gives them credit for. And you know, this is just a really good team. They're a really fun story, for March, and they're not just a fun story. They could easily win a game. They have beaten tournament teams. Like I said, they beat Vanderbilt. They beat Kansas State, who isn't a tournament team, but they did beat them on the road. And Kansas State has beaten a ton of tournament teams this year. Then you have Omaha. They beat St. Thomas 85-75 to claim the Summit League auto bid. Worth noting that they already had it wrapped up because St. Thomas is ineligible for the tournament due to that stupid rule that I talk about every year. Then you have Troy. They beat Arkansas State 94-81 to get the Sun Belt auto bid. I talked about them earlier as a tournament win for one of the SEC teams. Also should mention, Omaha beats the crap out of a trash can after every single win. Go check it out on Twitter. It's pretty funny. But yeah, fun team also. One of those fun stories for March that you'll hear a few good tidbits from the broadcasters about. Then you have Wofford, who beat Furman 92-85 in the SoCon finals. The SoCon had the tournament one seed win, I think, 7 years in a row. And this year, the finals was between the seven seed and the four and the six seed. So, yeah, so much for that trend. But Wofford ends up, the semis were the seven versus the six with Wofford and VMI, I believe. But so much for that trend. Wofford bucks it, beats Furman in 92-85 to claim that auto bid. They had a great run a while ago back when Mike Young was still their coach. He's now the coach of Virginia Tech. But they had a good run back in like 2017 where they beat Kentucky in the first round. So beware, that program has a lot of tradition in the NCAA tournament, despite not having a great regular season this year. Then you have Delaware. This is not an auto bid, but Delaware is the 12 seed in the CAA, and they beat Towson, who was 16-2 in conference, 82-72. They will play in the finals of that conference tournament tonight against UNC Wilmington. And I don't know this off the top of my head, but I have a pretty good feeling they would be the lowest conference tournament seed to ever win the conference tournament. Because, I mean, most conferences didn't even have 12 teams until a few years ago. And I highly doubt that any of those teams have won those conference tournaments. So congrats to Delaware for making this run, even if they don't make it all the way. This is just an amazing run that they've embarked on. And Just one more game stands in their way from an NCAA tournament appearance, despite a pretty rough overall season.
All right. Well, not sure if that's going to be a bid stealer if that happens, but we can talk about that another time. Next week, we'll be talking about the NCAA tournament. Let's turn our attention, though, right now over to professional basketball with our weekly look back at the NBA.
Delaware, definitely not a bid thief. The CAA is definitely not getting another tournament team. They not even close. But in the Eastern Conference, moving on to the NBA, of course, now you have the Cavs. You know who they won't be a bid thief. They have already clinched a playoff spot. They are 54-10 on the year. They've won 14 in a row. I talked about them flirting with that, 72-10 and 73-9 record. They're not going to do that because they'd still need to win another 20 games in a row on top of their current 14-game winning streak. But it's their second winning streak where you just look at the standings and you're going, that's got to be a misprint. And you know what? It's not. They are really, really that dominant. Then you have the Celtics, who are 47-18, 7.5 games back of the Cavs. They lost the Cavs last week, but the Celtics have now won 5 in a row since that game. They have almost made the gap between them and the Cavs smaller than the gap between them and the Knicks, which is now a 5.5 game gap between the Celtics and the Knicks. The Knicks only 5-5 in their last 10, lost Jalen Brunson for a few weeks as well, so that's kind of important. Maybe someone can catch them at the 3 seed. Don't know. That 4.5 game lead is pretty big. But the Bucks, like I said, 4.5 games back. They're 7-3 in their last 10, 36-27 on the year. You have the Pacers and the Pistons, who are tied for the 5 and 6 seeds now. The Pacers at 5-5 in their last 10, but they've lost 3 in a row, which allowed the Pistons to get into that tie. The Pistons, meanwhile, are 7-3 in their last 10 to get to that position. So 5 and 6 seed tied between the Pacers and Pistons. Very, very interesting outlook there in the East. Then, of course, in the play-in bracket, you have the Hawks, 23.5 games back at 31-34. They've won 3 in a row, though, so respectable by them. 4.5 games back of the Pistons. And then the Magic and the Heat are 30-36 and 29-35, respectively. Both of them 3-7 in their last 10. Both of them 1.5 games back of the Hawks, which means, of course, that they are 7 games back, or excuse me, 6.5 games back of the Pistons and the Pacers. The Magic 3-7 in their last 10. Heat 3-7 in their last 10 with a 4-game losing streak. Then you have the Bulls, who have actually distanced themselves from the really, really bad teams in the East. They've won 3 in a row. They're at 27-38. Only 2.5 games back of the Heat and the Magic. They're closer now to the Hawks than they are to the Nets, who were the first team out of the play-in bracket. Josh Giddey's been playing pretty well recently. I've seen a lot of chatter about that. Then you have the Nets and the Sixers at 22-42 each. Yikes. Both 2-8 in their last 10. Embiid is out for the season for the Sixers. Their season's probably over. Then you have the Raptors at 22-43, also season probably over just because they're not that good and they're 5 games back at the playoff spot. But they're 5-5 in their last 10. You have the Hornets at 16-48 and the Wizards at 13-50 all the way at the bottom. That's the worst record in the league, which they also had last year. Then you have in the Western Conference, the Oklahoma City Thunder at 53-12. They have lost their last game. Still 8-2 in their last 10, though. But the Nuggets are behind them, 11 games back in second place. They moved ahead of the Lakers this week because the Lakers lost 2 in a row. The Lakers still 8-2 in their last 10, though obviously had a big winning streak before that. Now we got to see what happens without LeBron playing. Seeding is tight, though, so the Lakers could definitely drop down a matchup or two or even lose home court in that first round if this losing streak continues, especially because the Grizzlies are 41-24. They have won 3 in a row, and they're now tied with the Lakers for that third spot. And the Rockets have also won 3 in a row. They are 1 game behind the Grizzlies and the Lakers for that third and fourth spot. Of course, the Rockets spent a lot of time at the beginning of the season up there in that category anyway. They are 40-25, 2 games back of the Lakers in the loss column, same amount of wins. Grizzlies have one more win than the Lakers, but also have one more loss. Then you have the Warriors, who are 16 games back overall, 3 back of the Rockets, and then obviously that whole bunch up of 4 teams within 2 games of each other. They are on a heater. They have won 5 in a row. They're 9-1 in their last 10. So the Warriors playing their best basketball when it counts the most. With that new look, Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry team. Steph has been going off recently. Can't hurt that team at all. Then you have the Timberwolves, who are 37 and 29. They're a half game back of the Warriors because they have won five in a row. So they're keeping pace there. One game behind them in the eighth seed currently are the Los Angeles Clippers. They have won three in a row, but now, of course, the Warriors and the Timberwolves pushing them down into the play-in bracket from the sixth seed that they had held for most of the year. Then you have the Kings. They're two games back of the Clippers, 33 and 31, but they are a game ahead of the Mavericks, who are now at 33 and 33 and even 500, struggling without Luka Doncic, now without Kyrie Irving for the rest of the season. Obviously, already don't have Anthony Davis. This team is just very injured, but no team just wants to come up and get this 10th spot. I don't know why, but the Suns are 4-6 in their last 10. They're still 2.5 games back of the Mavericks. Kind of running out of time at this point. Only 17 games left in the season for them, 16 left for the Mavericks. And then the Trailblazers, who were close in this race for a little bit, have now lost four in a row. So they're at 28 and 38. They're 2.5 back of the Suns, which means they're five back of the Mavericks. Then you have the Spurs. They obviously are dealing with the Wembanyama injury. They're now 2-8 in their last 10 at 26 and 37. The Pelicans are 17 and 48. They've lost four in a row. And the Jazz have lost six in a row. They're at 15 and 50, and they became the first team in the league to get eliminated from playoff contention.
All right, well, that wraps up our look back at the NBA for the week. It also wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, March 18th, where we will look back at Patrick's weekend predictions and talk about basketball. As I previewed before, we will have a preview of the NCAA men's tournament, maybe even the women's tournament, but definitely the men's tournament. And we will have another weekly review of the NBA. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his weekly college basketball bracket updates, which will be posted twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays throughout the season. I guess this Friday will be the last update as Patrick does his prediction potentially, or maybe not. Maybe you'll do one right before the brackets come out. I'm not sure. And also Patrick's picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday. All this content will be on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24, on both Twitter and Instagram. And some of that content will be on our website, 4thand24.com. Thank you for listening.